Pull up a chair, the stories begin. Patrick and Randy are letting you in. From the desert lights where the big names are, it's Big Conversations, Little Bar.
Welcome to Big Conversations, Little Bar, the Coachella Valley's favorite podcast, recorded live at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert. Get ready for another fascinating hour of meeting people who make the desert city such a spectacular place to be. Now, nestled in their corner booth perch, well lubricated and raring to chat, here's Patrick Evans and Randy Florence.
And we are back here at Skip Page's Little Bar, the coveted corner booth, the best real estate in the entire bar. I'm Patrick Evans, along with my co-host and the spiritual guru, life coach, mentor. What other accolades can I bestow upon you? Randy Florence, ladies and gentlemen.
I should be getting paid a lot more than I'm getting paid. That's a lot of jobs.
You get paid?
You're not getting paid? You're not getting paid for doing this
podcast? No, I'm getting paid. I just didn't think we were paying you.
I get co-host wages. Hey, good to see you.
Welcome. How are you?
And who do we need to say hi to before we get started?
Who do we need to say hi to?
Well, we would like to show our appreciation for the McCallum Theater.
Absolutely. That's not just to say hi. That's a...
Hi, McCallum.
Hi, McCallum. By the way, I recently was at the McCallum for the wonderful performance by Paul Anka. It was incredible. This guy is 84 and he puts on a hell of a show. It was amazing.
Did you go see him after the show?
Did not go see him after the show this time.
And was that because you were still had PTSD from the last time you went to see him?
Yeah.
I want to hear this story.
Our guest is J.R. Roberts, the president of the Palm Springs Plaza Foundation, former Palm Springs council member, head of the planning commission at one point.
All of those things.
Architect.
Mm. Did you have a police escort just coming over here?
He's waiting out front.
Yeah, waiting outside.
Which is why I get another one of these giant vodkas we're sitting here drinking.
Absolutely.
It's perfectly allowed. But welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
You didn't tell him your Paul Anka story.
Right, I'll tell you the Paul Anka story.
Dying
real quick.
To hear the Paul Anka story. Forget the theater.
This is about 10 years ago, and Paul was playing at Fantasy Springs. And he performed for the Sinatra Golf Tournament. I was there that night. I really enjoyed it. And he was doing his public show the next night. And the folks at Fantasy were like, well, if you want to come back, well, I said, great. So I go. And I end up sitting next to these three women and their husbands, and they're like, you're kind of young for a Paul Anka fan. And I'm like, well, I just, I love the music. And we kind of talk a little bit, and I'm like, and you guys are also a little young. Oh, no, we've been fans for life because we're three of his daughters. Like, oh, that's so cool. And so through the concert, and I'm singing along, I know all the songs, Oh, Diana, I know all of the songs. And they're like, wow, you really are. Like, come with us afterwards and meet Dad. And I'm like, and I have seen videos on, YouTube. He's famously kind of irascible.
Curmudgeon-y.
Oh, okay.
He's a little, and I was like, no, I don't want to intrude. They're like, no, Dad would love it. Dad would love it. You have to come in. So after the concert, we're working our way, and I thought, okay, well, there's a kind of a nice entourage going down here. It thins out, and now it is just his daughters, their spouses, and me. We get to his dressing room, and he comes out, and sees his first daughter, gives her a big hug, handshake to her husband, works his way down the line. Oh, great, great to see you. He gets to me, he looks right at me, and he goes, and who the fuck are you?
And without humor, just...
No. He was like, who the fuck are you? And I was like, and I was sort of speechless, and the daughter standing next to me, she's like, oh, Dad, this is Patrick Evans. He's a local weatherman. He does an entertainment show. He's a huge fan. Oh, thanks very much. And then that some total of my experience with the Paul.
And the daughters felt the need to subject you to this.
I guess.
Were they mad at you?
Yeah. They were like, he liked you. I'm like, I could tell.
Well, they were all from different mothers, so they weren't all that close.
No, they were all from his first wife.
Oh, okay.
But he was in the dressing room with his most recent wife, and at the time he had two little kids.
And was she younger than the daughters?
Yes.
Ah.
Yes.
That's such a Palm Springs story.
Younger, taller, hotter. She was all of those things.
And how old was he, and how old were the little kids?
The little kids, at that time, they were toddlers, so, and this was 10 years ago, at least. So he was like 74,
okay.
Early 70s, now he's 84. But he still puts on an amazing show.
I'm sure.
He was phenomenal, so...
Well,
but we're not here to talk
about it. It's been a hell of a show.
We need to get Paul Enke on the podcast, but today we have J.R. Roberts.
And I really welcome, J.R.
I don't know. Paul Enke is going to be far more interesting than I am.
I don't think so.
Well, you at least recognized both of us when you walked in, which was kind of nice. So, obviously, an enormous labor of love for you, but tell me how you first, when was the first time you thought, we need to get this theater back as a public venue for the community?
Wow. You know, when no one's ever asked that specific question, and you might find this interesting. So Suzanne Summers, I was on the city council at that point for the city of Palm Springs, and I had always been fascinated by the theater simply because I had been there when it was open, and my career and my passion is architectural preservation and old buildings. And Suzanne Summers approached me about the building. I had publicly said I was interested in the theater and wanted to look into it a little bit. And she approached me about wanting to take the theater, gut it, completely remodel it, and turn it into a nightclub, rip all the seats out of it, drop the ceiling, take out the balcony, just basically use the shell of the space. And she wanted to do a nightclub, and it was basically going to be the Suzanne Summers nightclub dinner club. And
you must have thought that was permanent. You must have thought that was a terrible idea. But how do you tell Suzanne that's a terrible idea?
Well, I didn't think it was a terrible idea in terms of her, although at her age wanting to start a club like that,
yeah.
I wondered how long the success it would be. I mean, Suzanne was remarkably healthy until the end, really. But I was a little bummed out that they wanted to strip. And the first thing I said to Suzanne, is there any way we can talk about this without gutting the theater? And she said, well, there's nothing to save there, which is when she lost me. Mm-hmm. And so I said, you know, you can certainly pursue this. You know, we can take it to the city. Do you have the money to do this? Because the city doesn't. And it's going to be millions to even do what you want to do with it. And they were willing to put in $1 million, and that was it. And it was never really clear where the rest of the money was going to go.
Like, circa what year
come
was
from. This would have been 2019.
Okay. So then not that long ago.
No, not that long ago at all. And so it languished. Suzanne kind of lost interest in it. And I think she was starting to feel her real health challenges. Mm-hmm. You know, she had been dealing with cancer for years and years and years and had lived with it far longer than most and done a great job with it. So that faded away. And other people started to come out of the woodwork. Charo showed up with her amazing sister. And if you've never been in the presence of Charo, have you?
I have at the McCallum.
Yeah. I've seen her at the McCallum.
Charo is amazing, by the way. And do you know that she has an almost identical sister who was cut to look like her?
No.
So I love that term cut when you talk about cosmetic surgery. And the sister, you meet the sister, and I can't think of her name. I have a picture of her. Looks just like Charo, and I realized she was cosmetically altered and dresses exactly like Charo.
Gosh.
So kind of they turned her into a twin, and she's amazing. They're a blast. You walk down the street with Charo, people are just falling at her feet. People love her. So and like Paul Enke, she's been around a while.
She's been around
It was
a while.
The most excited I'd ever seen the lobby of the McCallum the night she was there.
Right?
Of course, all the queens were there. Everybody was dressed up. It was just an amazing night.
It was, you
can
know
you
what?
Say Queens, John? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Just check.
In the Coachella Valley. Well, maybe not in Palm Desert with their new city council guy, but everywhere else.
Everywhere else. It's like, okay.
That was a 4-1 vote. So. Yeah.
I wrote him a letter that he didn't respond to, so I sent it to the paper, and it was in this Sunday. Next time he'll respond to me.
Probably.
Boy, what a way to waste all of your political capital in one night and piss off every city around you. Hope that guy grows up.
It was, yeah, I mean, it seemed like a political misstep. But, that's it.
Patrick just made the strongest statement he felt he could stay
that,
right then.
That's about as far as I can go with that.
But we digress. Remember,
we digress.
Meanwhile, back at the little Plaza Theater.
So really, like, just 7 years ago,
yeah,
this is when that conversation started.
And then, so one night, I was out with our then city manager, current councilman David Reddy, and we've been close friends for many years. And we were out having dinner, and I was about to finish up my term on the city council. And there may or may not have been tequila involved, but he looked me square in the eye and he said, "Jer, what's your legacy going to be?"
Ooh.
And I was a little pissed when he said it, because I said, you know, you mean writing all the vacation rental policy for this city and recreational because I'm a policy wonk. I said, that wasn't enough. You mean I've got to do something.
I haven't satisfied you, David.
David, either, you know, you're high from something other than tequila, or we need to have more tequila. So he said, no, I have a thought for you. And he said, what about the Plaza? You know, what are we going to do about the Plaza Theater? Because the city owns that theater outright. And it had been boarded up then by the, you know, for 6 or 7 years sitting there on its own. And I said, let me think about it. And I thought about it a little bit. And I went to the city council and I said, what if I try? What if I see what kind of interest I can muster in, for raising dollars and overseeing a restoration? And a few people looked me square in the eye and said, you mean you want to go out and try to raise private money for a city building? And I said, well, I hadn't thought of it that way. In my mind, I was going to find money to restore an old building. But that was basically the very beginning of it. It was kind of a weird personal challenge.
I don't think it's the first time, though, that private funds have been used, because it is city-owned, but it's a landmark. It's architecturally significant landmark. It is a historically significant landmark. Here's my question. And you guys, you did a phenomenal job of raising money. You got some great benefactors. David Lee, notably, really kind of, that was kind of the hook, right? Once he was on board.
Well, I'll tell you the best story about David Lee is right before COVID, I started seeing what kind of money I could raise. And we got about $500,000 in the bank. And I had, at that point, just a little coalition of locals helping me. It wasn't, and if we hadn't done the foundation, we hadn't done anything formal yet. I was just sort of a guy blessed from the city council. And now I'm gone from the city council. And they gave me a few bucks for promotion and this and that. And that was it. And COVID happened. And to use a the curtain fell. And I thought, this is over. I remember, do you guys remember for a brief moment, studios were streaming directly into our living rooms. For $20, you got the first run film in your living room. And I remember being heartbroken about that, thinking this is going to be the end of movie theaters. Yeah. This is what the studios have been waiting for the last 100 years.
Right, to cut the theater out.
Get those popcorn-munching middlemen out of the movie business. And I remember thinking, that's it. Movie theaters will be dead, or they will all be turned into nightclubs or Ross Dress for Less, you know? And so as we were coming out of COVID, I was out on my bike one day and I got a phone call from David Lee, who had given me, I think, $25,000 when I first started. And by the way, I was starting to give money back because people started saying, what's going on with the Plaza? And I said, I simply don't know. And the city's probably in a deep hole financially after COVID. The last thing they're going to care about is this old movie theater. So I just said to the city, anybody who asks for their money back, give it to them, because we hadn't spent a dollar at that point. And David said, what's going on? And I said, David, I don't know. I have no idea what the future of the Plaza is. And he just said, I've got a thought for you. And I said, okay. And he said, what if I were to give you $5 million? And at that point, we thought the restoration of the Plaza Theater was going to be about $12 or $15 million. We'll go there in a minute.
That is my question.
By the way, everybody in the room just kind of shook their heads and laughed at me when I said that under their breath. So, you know, he said, I have just one condition. And I said, what is that? And he said, that you stay and do it, and you have to stay to the end. But I will write you a check for $5 million.
Wow.
That's something.
And I said, I thought about it for a minute, and I thought, wow. And I said, David, I'll tell you what. I have a condition for you and a comment. He said, okay. And I said,
you must be pretty good friends with him.
You know,
because now you're negotiating.
Well,
I have a note for you, David.
But I mean, this guy was asking me to now give up what would end up being the next 5 years of my life. So I said, David, and I recognized what I had in my hand. So David Lee, you all know who David Lee mm-hmm. is. He created the show, you know, directed and wrote Cheers and created Frasier mm-hmm. and The Jeffersons and many of these, you know, these gigantic
iconic
television shows, yeah, that are still playing all over the world. And so I said, David, I'll tell you what, you have to stay and you have to be involved. And if I create a foundation, you have to be on that board and you have to stay. And he let out a deep sigh, and I said, oh, and you have to bring your Rolodex. And he said, okay. And I said, oh, and one comment. And he said, what's that? And I said, you know, I'm kind of a whore for my charities. I would have done it for Amel. And that, yeah, that is how we lost.
You overoffered. And
that's awesome.
You should add another caveat to that, by the way. You tell him he has to do Big Conversations, Little Bar. He has to come do our podcast.
Oh, I can probably get David here. We'll lie to him the way you did to me. And, you know, he's probably never seen the podcast, so he won't know what he's getting himself into.
Okay, perfect.
So
perfect.
Much better. I can probably get him out
you
here.
Can, yeah. If you can trick him here, then we're okay with that.
And tell him you had a pretty good time.
Yeah, lie about that, too.
I will.
All right,
no,
so
David's a sport. Actually, you will love speaking with David.
I always wonder, and we did a lot of news stories, and my question in the newsroom was, why is this project so expensive? Where, and I mean, you guys were very transparent. The foundation has been transparent. And, but like, where does all, I mean, like, you guys raised over, what, $21 million?
Good for you.
You sounded just like William Shatner when you asked that question. Where did that,
where did that
money?
Do you think wearing that pin?
I think the tattoo on his wrist has something to do with it.
Or the pin has literally, he's morphing.
He is.
Spend a lot of time with William Shatner. So.
You start sounding like him.
Now that's all I hear.
I'm sorry.
You just took that in a
and
hole.
And they have the same hair.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, I didn't know we were going in this direction.
It's a weird direction.
That's the only direction I know to go. I'm sorry. Back to you two.
No, I think, you know, I think it became a really expensive project. And I think probably not surprised is the right word, but I think maybe a little sticker shock at what the final cost was.
To say the least. But remember, too, that a lot of that was driven by the time. After COVID, construction costs went up by about 40%.
Yeah.
And I think it stayed there if it even hasn't gotten worse. So we were originally looking at, well, I'll leave it here. Once we redid the design for the restoration, the architect, and I hired the best company I could find in the country who specializes in this kind of work. They did Union Station downtown. They've wow. done, if you're not familiar with Union Station in L.A., it's worth flying to L.A. just to see Union Station.
Yeah.
Or you could take a train into Union Station.
It's hard to catch a train from Palm Springs right now.
Oh, boy. Yeah, there were some interesting stories about that recently.
Yep.
So, anyway, you know, we were just... So these professional architects brought in a company to do a real estimate of what it was going to cost based on the design. And they said about $17 million. And I said, wow, that's not too bad. You know, we were estimating 12 to 15 originally, and you're only estimating, you know, a few thousand more, you know, and
million.
Yeah, or a few million more. A few million more. That vodka's kicking in.
Million, thousand.
These days, it doesn't mean a lot, right? And I said, okay, well, why don't we just sort of plan on it being about $18 million? Maybe we'll, you know, give that a good solid chunk to add to it as, you know, a possible overload. So we then went out to bid, and we got three bids. And so this became a city project because it's a city building. So the city said, we'll contract it. You got the money. We'll contract the building or the work. And all three bids came in at almost $27,000.
$27 million.
$1 million. I'm lost here on
more
dollars.
Vodka.
And it's like just water, ladies.
And we knew we were going to need after that. We were going to need a few million dollars at least just to operate it and get it open and do the FF&E and everything else it was going to take to launch the theater and have some real endowment in place. Because we didn't know if we'd do well in the beginning. So, yeah, we instantly got up into the $30 million range. But that's really what happened. I think more COVID. I mean, I remember going back to the architects and losing it, saying, how could you give us an estimate like this? How could you? We're paying you a fortune. We paid our contractor, you know, $1.3 million for that project. I said, how could
for
you
for the architecture planning?
Just for the design and planning and oversight for, and this, it was a very complex restoration. And it's, guys, remember, this isn't a remodel. This is a nuts and bolts restoration.
Right.
Down to the accurate everything. Paint, color, finish, lighting fixture, everything.
And by the way, thank you for that. I mean, what that's done, it is just phenomenal. So thank you.
Thank you for saying thank you, Randy. That means a lot right now. I've got a lot of tired board members. And they will appreciate that. I'll let them know. So, you know, the bottom line was we at that point, we were lost because we didn't have anywhere near that money. At that point, I think we had $15 million in the bank. And we were patting ourselves on the back.
It's
we
thought, like, this is
that's a lot of money.
God, pretty close to the finish line.
We raced 50. How did we do that? And
David Lee coming in with five. That's a good seed money.
That listen, it was the only. Listen, I went to the city council originally with that number. I said, David, even with your $5 million, I don't know that the city's going to bless this. I don't even know if they can pay the police right now. They're, you know, because every city fell underwater, particularly cities that count on tourism.
Right.
Remember, Palm Springs doesn't grow corn or make cars. I mean, the tourists go away and all of our income goes away.
Yeah.
So I went back to the city and stood there at the and I said, hey guys, I got a guy who's willing to give us $5 million. I'm not sure I want to do this. How do you feel? And they looked at each other and they looked at me and they said, if you're willing to stay, we'll back you.
Wow.
And that's how we got it started. So finally, but at that point, when we got that crazy $27 million and we knew we were going to probably be 31 when we were done, I just went back to the city council and I said, we're shovel ready. You've got millions of dollars in Measure J dollars. And I won't explain what Measure J dollars are, but you have millions of dollars for city projects sitting and waiting for those projects to be ready. We have a shovel-ready project. We can start tomorrow, and we'll pay you back. We'll go find. We'll keep fundraising, and we'll pay you back. We need the city to front $20 million for the project. Shockingly, they went for it, and they took the risk. And
now, is it still? Was it decided that you had to pay them back? Like I remember covering that, but I don't remember exactly the final details.
The final details were that we would pay them back $10 million in cash, and we would continue to pay them back money as they came in. But the rest of that other $10 million was going to come in about $2 to $4 million in direct tax base for the city through TOT and other things. The Plaza Theaters, and it's already proving to be true, is going to spin off about $40 million in economic
Holy
impact.
Cow.
With restaurants, hotels, bars, everything you can imagine, you know, the money that rolls in.
Brandini Toffee's going to do pretty good, too.
Well, they're right there.
Yeah.
I know this to be true because I have two friends who live in Palm Desert and will rarely, if ever, go to Palm Springs. But there was something they really wanted to see at the Plaza Theater, and I know for a fact, because I helped them get the dinner reservations, they got, you guys got money out of their pocket you never would have gotten before. It is anecdotal evidence, but I think it's important.
By the
evidence.
Way, I'm going to quote you on this, because I love this story. And what you probably know that we learned was that half of the patrons of the theater come from out of town, which is true about the Acrisure Arena as well. Half of them don't live here. And that's what we found about the Plaza, too. And we knew that even prior with the Plaza because of the Follies. So that's a lot of money coming in from out of town. And yeah, even those hardcore people who just don't like Palm Springs, we knew we might draw them back.
And I will prefaces. I'm not going to name names, but my friends, it's not that they don't like Palm Springs. It's just too far. because they live on Monterey and Country Club. And I'm like,
I live in La Quinta.
You live a long way. You don't even live in the valley. You live in La Quinta.
I have to get through Border Patrol before I can come
Guys,
into the plaza.
I was shuffling through my underwear drawer for my passport to come here to the bar. I live in Palm Springs.
Oh, we're glad you found it.
It's so funny to me how perspective changes, because I spend some time in L.A., and you don't think anything about driving 45 minutes to an hour just to go.
Well, I'm
from
Silicon Valley, and it was the same thing. It took us an hour to go everywhere.
But when you were in Silicon Valley, they were still growing corn. It wasn't a tech
hub. There were parts of it that were still growing corn. And we're going to get into Northern California here in a couple of minutes, because it always excites me when somebody's on the show that knows anything about Northern California.
I know a little about Northern California.
I know you do.
All right, well, let's take a quick break to acknowledge our presenting sponsor, the McCallum Theater. We greatly appreciate it. And by the way, Paul Anka's show was fantastic. It was terrific. So go see a great show. They have tons of great shows, and they've extended the season. Let's hear from them. And we are back with our guest, J.R. Roberts. We're talking about the Plaza Theater. We're going to branch out a little bit. While we were talking about the McCallum Theater, I think it is important because Gary Keefe is the head of the McCallum Theater Board, and his husband, Barry Manilow, just underwent lung cancer surgery. Yes. We want to wish Barry the best. He posted from his hospital.
And the word is he's doing well.
Yeah.
So. Oh, great to hear.
Yeah, that's really good to hear.
That's important.
Well, you want to talk about Northern California.
Well, I'm always fascinated at how I ended up sitting across the table from anybody here during these interviews. And so I always kind of move us here and get us here. So you were in Sausalito. Mm. You were the mayor of Sausalito.
Indeed.
And what years was that?
That was 1998 to, well, it was 4 years, so 2001, 2002, which is when I moved to Palm Springs permanently. I already owned a home here, and I was going back and forth.
Okay.
But completing my term in Sausalito let me fly away for the last time.
One of the greatest little towns in America, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, you don't mean Palm Springs.
I meant Sausalito. Palm Springs is okay, but I live in La Quinta.
Well, you've been to Palm Springs.
I've been to Palm Springs.
We can send a car from, when Patrick was saying, what cost the plaza so much, and I was going to say, well, keeping the helicopter in the air was the biggest to get people from La Quinta down to Palm Springs.
So what took you to Northern California? You were born in Southern California, right?
I was actually born back east, but I grew up and spent most of my life in L.A., in the Los Angeles area. And
where were you born back east?
In Connecticut.
Oh, okay. I was born in New Jersey and grew up in Virginia.
Okay. Then no wonder we had to come here to meet Patrick.
Well, I was born back east. Is Reno,
but that's east.
Kind of counts, I think.
Ish.
Yeah.
Ish.
Oh my God! Tahoe is way out east, then, isn't it? Oh my God!
Oh man!
And I was born in the previous century, so I always like to talk about that too.
Boy, there was an awkward silence right after that. What happened there?
Everybody's thinking about what I meant.
All born in the
Yes, we were. But isn't that a great line?
Yeah.
Anyway,
I
just didn't
hurt us
as much of it as you did.
You know, today I had to log into a website. You know how you have to scroll down to your year of birth? It took me like a half hour.
It's like it's like spinning the wheel on the Price is Right for the Showcase Showdown.
We've gone way off topic here.
So,
by the way, sitting in a room full of men of a certain age, I wouldn't drop that line. That was just harsh.
Oh, what, about being born in a previous...
And then when you realize it wasn't just him, it was me, it was all of us.
That's a Nate Bargatze line that I stole from him.
Randy is prehistoric.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah,
that kind of
I'm prehistory.
It.
Yes.
And so we're just Jurassic at this point? Okay.
So what took you to Northern California?
His kids once asked him, did they have history when you were growing up? Because, you know, it was
it wasn't when I was in school. It wasn't even a subject yet.
Like that. They hadn't admitted it.
There wasn't enough.
There wasn't enough history to talk about.
They did have one book, but it only had 3 pages.
Do you guys spend most of these interviews off the rails like this?
Yes.
Because I'm kind of loving it.
Pretty much. Sharon Lawrence told us last week that it was a good thing that we didn't have her mic on while we were talking at the beginning, because she would have just been laughing and spitting her drink out.
I will say that the pre-talk was pretty good.
Good. Good. Well, we like to warm up. So, all right. Well, yeah. How did you get to Sausalito and get involved so civically that you were the mayor?
It's quick answers on both. I had been in Southern California for most of my life. Excuse me. And I think I was in my late 30s at that point. And after the 94 earthquake in Los Angeles, and I lived in Santa Monica at the time, and Santa Monica was leveled. And I remember thinking, you know, maybe it's time to go do something else.
And it's been a whole 5 years since the Bay Area has fallen into the ocean.
Yeah, you didn't move away from earthquake danger.
No, I wasn't running from 15, the earthquake. I just
15
thought it,
years. Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought it would be time to go do something else. And you know, I thought, you know, I don't know how much longer I'm going to live if we're going to be having earthquakes like this. I better have a different experience. I knew I loved the Bay Area, and I got in my car and I thought, I'm just going to check out Bay Area cities. I had never been to Sausalito, or I had never been there that I could remember. As a kid, we had gone there, but I didn't much remember it. And based on what you said, Randy, I drove into that city and just fell in love.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that living and being involved with a city that is everybody's favorite city, I always would say, you know, Palm Springs is like Sara Lee cheesecake. Nobody doesn't love Sausalito. And it was true. It was this fairyland where everybody who walks into that city or lives in that city walks around in the state of bliss. There's something so magical and beautiful about Sausalito, and everybody, it exceeds everybody's dreams.
Oh.
No matter how many photographs you see and no matter what people tell you about it, it's more magical when you get there.
It really is. It's so charming and so fun.
Spend much time at Skoma's?
Oh, my God. Of course we
did. My favorite place.
Of course we did. And
they tore down Alioto's.
I just read that. That took my heart away when I saw that today.
I took my parents there for their 55th anniversary.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, it is heartbreaking because those old landmarks are leaving, and it kills me. And that was starting to happen when I lived there. But that's how I got there. And how did I get into politics? The same way I got into politics here. I have no political ambitions whatsoever. Never have, never will. It was watching what I felt like were corrupt politicians, and it was actually close enough to my world where I thought I could make a difference.
And so what kind of work were you doing in Sausalito when you...
I was a partner in an architecture and design firm, specializing in restoration.
Restoration.
And we had a guy in the city council who was my next door neighbor. He was a real estate attorney, and he was using it to his benefit.
Mm.
And his clients were getting permits to do things that other people were not getting approval to do, and it was making steam come out of my ears.
Yeah.
And I literally thought, I'm going to run against this guy. I don't care if I win. I just want to take enough votes away from him that he doesn't. Nobody was more shocked. Here's a guy who had no prior experience in this, and I won the seat. And it shocked me. Somebody had to call me and tell me to get down to the party because I actually won this. JR, what are you doing? I just took a bath. No, you won. You have
you actually won, JR.
There's an old Robert Redford movie, The Candidate. Do you remember the movie?
My God, sure.
And at the very end, he looks over at his age or his PR guy and says, "What do I do now?"
Yeah.
Is that kind of how you felt when they called you and said,
"Yeah, I probably can't say what I was less scared, but I was scared, as you can imagine. It blew my mind, actually, that I won. And
you can actually say anything you want on the podcast.
You can say shitless, scared, shitless.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was Michael
scared.
Holmes had 5 tequilas. Everything was said on this show.
I told the Paul Anka story. I can say you did. Who the fuck are you? You can say shitless. It's okay.
Yeah. Oh my God, it just makes me so happy to hear Patrick say shit or fuck.
Oh, I could make you a lot happier. Go ahead.
Clearly, there's no lack of vocabulary at this table.
No, no.
So anyway, yeah, I won the seat. I remember sitting down with the city manager, and I looked in his eyes, and I said, I'm going to need your help. I don't have a clue of how this works. And he said, you won't be the first. So
now, yeah. When you, the first election, was that to council or was that mayor?
That was to council.
Okay.
Yeah, and mayor's rotated there. So got my shot at being mayor, and I think I was the first openly gay mayor in the state at that point.
Wow.
But there was no fanfare around that, which made me happy, because the last thing I ever wanted was that to overshadow what I cared about. So yeah, it was great. But that's how I ended up doing it there. And that's how I ended up doing it in Palm Springs as well. If I say this, the name Steve Pugnay, does Patrick lit up? that's what Steve Pugnay drove me crazy in Palm Springs, and watching the way he behaved. And I thought, no, the city's small and wonderful, and that's what you get in small towns. They're mostly honest, and they're mostly hardworking, caring people. They're not people who have a personal agenda.
Well, everybody's watching everybody else, so they know what's happening.
Well, and it's generally real, everyday folks who are doing the work here, who are doing it out of the love of public service. And so that's what happened in Palm Springs too. I wasn't quite as shocked when I won Palm Springs, but again, it still surprised me, because I didn't have a lot of experience here. I think I had served on the Planning Commission for a short time.
But that is one of the routes, if you're really
interested. That's the entree, yeah.
Yeah.
It can be, yeah. People do use that as a rung on the ladder. But, you know, being on the Planning Commission was really more where I belong, because that's my expertise. So getting into politics just made it more fun and very interesting. And I will tell you that, for me, serving in those positions was, it's like getting a master's in civics, and it's like the Rubik's Cube that you will play and never win, working for municipalities. It's fun, interesting work, and I urge all people to get involved with their communities. If you think you can't make a difference, you're simply one application away from making a difference, and that's in your own community. When people say, "I, you know, the country's falling apart and you know, we're in political chaos," I'll say, then start helping at home. That's how you make
it.
A difference. Don't sit home and cry about it. Get up and do something.
Yeah.
And if all you can do is go to your local city hall, all right, my rant's over. What else did you want to know, Patrick?
No, no, no. I got involved. I live in Cathedral City, and I serve on two commissions, and one of them is the Mobile Home Fairness, Fair Housing Commission, and the other is the Historic Preservation Commission, which is relatively new. But I think, you know, there's some things I can't do because of my job.
And you're being asked. There's people approaching you for certain things there,
yes.
Right?
I was asked to do Planning Commission. My boss thought, nah, it's fun until you say no to something.
Right.
And then,
boy,
then
that's
people,
the truth.
People get upset. And I live in late Mark Carnevale's district, and a couple of people asked me if I would throw my hat in the ring. I'm like, no, if the station said no to the Planning Commission, they're certainly going to say no to City Council. Yeah. But it was flattering, to be honest. It was very nice. There are things you can do, and serving on those commissions is important work too.
Indeed.
But if as you point out, you had the expertise for the Planning Commission, which is really important, especially with a city like Palm Springs, where there is so much history, and you want to be delicate and correct about handling it.
So much of what happens in these cities comes back to land use. So Planning Commission really makes a difference in how a city shapes and grows. And that's what was always fascinating to me, is that, you know, and I lived in two cities that were about the preservation of their history. Sausalito was all about that. I'm telling you, I had neighbors who wanted to kill themselves over placement of a tree. And, you know, you talk about hurting old buildings in Sausalito. Literally, we had police in council chambers long before it was fashionable, or long before you worried that you'd get shot up just serving on those positions.
Well, that waterfront, I mean, it's all just old buildings. I mean, like, it's all 1800s.
And worth its weight in gold. So you had developers coming out of the woodwork constantly wanting to rip a lot of that stuff down and just go big and go, you know, go wild. And so in Sausalito,
20 stories with views of the city and
or ripping gorgeous old restaurants and places down that are so much a part of the character and history. Let's face it, what makes Sausalito charming, aside from that gorgeous waterfront, it's its charm and character, which is still intact. I mean, Starbucks shut down there. What does that say when, you know, the community supports its other coffee houses so much that Starbucks had to leave?
Right.
That's
pretty remarkable.
That is.
And that was a city I wanted to live in. And Palm Springs is that way a lot. I mean, we are certainly a city, but our character is everything. Look, you know, for a week and a half every year, people come from all over the world just to look at us and talk about how, you know, our mid-century modern roots and, oh yeah, then that little Hollywood connection. But I love living in cities with character like that.
Well, I think it was really funny to me because we were just covering the film festival gala, and Leonardo DiCaprio sadly had to pull out because he got trapped in St. Bart's, which is not a terrible place to be.
Is that when he heard he got delayed, it was St. Bart's?
Yes.
That's where he was. Yeah.
I was thinking he was stuck on a runway in Arizona trying to get into Palm Springs that night.
Well, there were air quality or air traffic issues here. But he was in St. Bart's. But that made national news. It was on all of the cable channels.
Yep.
And very specifically referencing that he was to come to Palm Springs to accept an award and couldn't make it.
Well, there were a couple of large, I think, was it Variety that did a huge article about all the stars canceling their vacations early so they could get into Palm Springs for the film festival this year.
The film festival is serious business in Hollywood, and I never understood it until it was explained to me. But essentially, most of the people that get that award here go on to much bigger awards in Hollywood, if not.
Well, and that's, I think, the genius of Harold, who moved the date to put it within the voting period for the Oscars. So when you give somebody an award, it used to be, it was after award season, and so they were no longer campaigning. But now, if you say, oh, we're going to give you an award, well, then you can campaign for your Oscar by saying our film was recognized at the Palm Springs Film Festival, too.
And that means something now.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and it influences the voters, the Academy members. It's a really big deal.
It's a really big deal. And Harold was brilliant. And he was brilliant in marketing, and he did figure it out. How do you get the big celebrities here? Get them here before Oscar. But I don't even know that he knew how important it would become. I think when it's like when you get invited for an award at the film festival, it's a Willy Wonka gold ticket.
Yeah.
And it pretty much requires that to go to the gala these days.
It does.
Yes.
It does. And I'm going to give a shout out to Chairman Chandi, thank you very much for the invitation.
But that was only one invitation, right?
Well, for me and my wife.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Chairman Chandi.
It was, too. But we missed you, Randy.
Yes, I'm sure.
We talked about you
fondly. I was
fondly.
In my pajamas.
We talked about you fondly.
Hey, John, look at that. A rabbit hole.
Shocking. All right, Jared. When you were on city council, I mean, there are lots of big personalities in Palm Springs. And talk about your relationship with Harold Matzner, who was heavily involved, good friends with David Reddy, who was city manager during your tenure.
Yeah, I'll tell you the story that's never been told because I like you guys. At the time I really came back after COVID, along with David Lee's $5 million, a wonderful guy in Palm Springs named Frank Jones, who owns and operates Palm Springs Life, of course, and many other publications, and just a great human, does a lot of good, and most people don't even know all the good that Frank does behind the scenes. And Frank came to me and he said, Jer, I want to start this cool music festival called Oasis. And his plan was to use all 70 venues in the valley that he could come up with and have a film festival style, but for live music. And I thought it was the best idea I ever heard because I've always felt we don't have enough live music here. I mean, you know, that little thing they do in La Quinta.
That festival out there, that little thing they
do.
Oh, it's real close to my home. You guys should come visit.
About 3 weekends.
Out in the middle of that field. Yeah, that
in the middle of nowhere.
Because they don't know what else to do with it.
Apologies to Glenn Miller.
But
in the middle of nowhere.
That little music event aside, we don't have a lot on a regular basis. So he came to me and he said, Jer, I'd like to use the plaza as sort of the ground zero for it. Now, remember, the plaza hadn't been restored yet, and I was using it for fundraisers. And I'm telling you, it was literally being held together with chewing gum and paper mache.
Yeah, I was a little surprised. I've been to a couple of those fundraisers. I was like really surprised that they let you, that they would let you in it.
Listen, when I first started it, I went to the guy who kind of oversaw that building, and I said, you know, I want to be able to take potential donors through the theater. And he said, I don't know if it's safe to do that. Now, subsequently, we had massive events in there. We had Rock the Plaza. We had every one of the 800 seats filled. I had a big event with Nancy Sinatra there. And so eventually we learned, and with a lot of love from the fire department and things, we got the theater operable. I mean, the theater was built really well, so nobody was ever at risk. But ultimately, Frank came to me and he said, I'd like to launch the Oasis from the plaza. And he said, I know that will help what you're doing, and it gives me an 800-seat theater. And we went to city council with this. So here's where Harold Matzner comes in, and he kind of the first time for the Plaza Theater. So I said, you know, Frank, let's you and I go together publicly. We'll talk to the city council together. Hopefully with my history there and your history, we can talk them into doing that. And Harold got wind of it, and he went crazy on us. He went absolutely crazy. He spoke again, and he was friends with me. He was friends with Frank, and he went ballistic, and he said, this is a terrible idea. This is a terrible use for the theater. They're going to come in and stomp that theater, and with live music in there, they're going to ruin it. But we found out later that he really had another agenda, which was that he wanted to take over the theater, and he wanted to use it for the film festival, which is a great idea. But up until that point, it hadn't happened, with the exception is the film festival was originally started in the plaza by, of course, Sonny Bono.
Right.
But that was a long time prior. So Harold didn't like the idea of us taking over the theater because he wanted to take
it
over.
He wanted it, yeah.
And so he and I sat down in a tense conversation, and if you knew Harold, tense conversations came quickly and commonly. I mean, he was a great, great man, but similar to, you know, Anka, he could be difficult.
I've had a tense conversation with Harold. I know how that goes.
I've had my hair blow back a few times. You haven't had that experience, Patrick.
But I actually did. it was permanent.
Once
you have hair, yeah. So that's right. So Harold said, Harold was really angry, and I said, and he went off on Frank, and they were good friends, and they quit talking for a minute. And I sat down with him. I said, I'll tell you what, Frank, what do you want? Harold, I said, what do you want? And I said, if you want the theater, take it. I said, I don't know that I can raise the money. I don't know that I can do this. I'm going to try. You take it. And his proposal was he was going to lease it from the city for $1. He was going to remodel the theater for his uses. And
pay for the remodel?
Well, that was, again, like Suzanne Summers, there was a question on where the money was going to come from. But I think ultimately he knew he would have had to come up with the money to do it. And Harold's the guy who knew how to come up with money.
He could come up with money, and he probably had it.
He probably had it. So where that story went was I stepped back. And I said, you go sell that to city council, and I will step back. I'm not going to go head-to-head with you on this. And he went forward. And I don't know if you remember that, Patrick. For a moment, there was a big proposal. And
yes.
The city, he worked out something with the city. And then I think what happened was, I think Harold was planning to spend a few million dollars to sort of put the theater back in working order.
It was more like clean it up, but not the full renovation that you guys were investing in.
I mean, the film festival having a year-round theater is a great idea, and they should. And they kind of do now with the Plaza Theater, but or what it's become. But I think what happened is he went out and got bids for what he wanted to do. And I think at that time, his bids came in at 13 or 14 million. And from what I heard, he went to the board of the film festival and they said, no, we're not going to support this. It's, we don't have that kind of money and we're not going to support this. It's too big of a project. So he essentially walked away.
Did he call you and tell you Oasis sounded like a really good idea?
So Randy, have you met Harold?
For that long.
Okay. Then that's the answer is no. That's why you asked that question. So
he told me I was going to get to officiate his next wedding. That was my relationship with Harold.
Well, that's pretty good stuff.
That's a good relationship with Harold.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to happen, though.
When I had a sausage company for a while, Harold did serve it at Spencer's. He told me at an event that he was going to do it. And he did it.
He did it.
And I give him great credit for that.
Oh, so it might have really happened.
I remember that you had a sausage company.
I did,
company.
Yes. Yeah, for about 10 years we did that.
So I love your resume, Patrick. I love
the sausage
king. We would
king.
Walk through sausage. Your, you know, and you've done all these great public, and then there's this moment, sausage company.
Sausage
and
company.
Then blah, 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 blah. I want that in my resume
well,
as well.
Well, we can bring back the sausage company, Jerry. I'm just looking for some investors. If there's money left over from the plaza, let's just.
Listen. It sounds like they need to have a house sausage.
Well, yeah, you don't want to serve a hot dog at the Plaza Theater. You want to serve a Fulvio's Italian sausage.
Patrick, if you couldn't make sausage work in a city like Palm Springs, it's not going to work anywhere.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. That's the problem with sausage, and there's no double entendre. It's just the margins are small. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, my God. That could have been in the morning show, don't you think? He went to a new level of corny that I didn't see
pretty,
in this.
Pretty
corny. All right.
I will tell you, I'll tell you my Harold story just because you've been there. And it's not really about me, but it was about my first wife. She worked for the paper.
Okay.
And one year, the paper really wanted to roll out these little micro websites for various cities, and they were going to do it for their bigger cities. It was Gannett, but they were going to do the first one with a New Year's Eve event in Palm Springs. But it was designed; it was aimed at 20 somethings. So they wanted to do an inexpensive party, give somebody a couple glasses of champagne, a hat, and a noisemaker. So my wife at the time went to a couple of different places. And they, I think they ended up doing it, not at the Ace, but at the Avalon.
Sure.
And we were at the dedication to Jackie Lee Houston Plaza.
Okay.
And Jackie Lee had invited me to sit with her. So, you know, we're up on the dais, and, you know, it's a very nice ceremony, and right in front of the convention center. And then we go into the convention center for the after party, and Harold came up to me and literally grabbed me by my lapel. And he said, "What the hell is your wife doing over there at the paper?" And I said, I'm not sure what you're mad about. And he said, "This whole launch of the website, she should have come to me first. I'm the biggest advertiser at the paper. She should have come to me first." And I said, "Well, it's a $25 party for kids." Harold goes, "So I know that. And I pride myself on having one of the most expensive New Year's Eves, but she should have asked me first." He was really mad.
Wow.
And by the way, that was Harold. I mean, Harold essentially did so much good for the Valley in so many ways, but the price for that was that Harold had to be in control of everything.
He liked to be in control. But I will never, and I never did forget that. And that was a long time ago. And you know, we never really had another run in like that. We were always much more.
Well, you ended up divorcing the wife. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
If Harold says
that, I'm not a direct result. That's how he got back in his good grace. He said, I killed her off.
She moved to Buffalo. Or is it like, is that?
I had her leave the state.
She's gone.
Was she in hiding?
Well, he sent her to the U.S. Siberia.
One of the other ways, though, that we made it up to, and I don't know how this ended up, but it ended up on my credit card. But I ended up that New Year's Eve going to Spencer's and taking three other couples with us. Like, this is just to make Harold happy.
Good
for
decision.
You, sweetheart.
That was a meal couple. Well, you know what? That was Harold. Well, I'll tell you, the end of the Plaza story was that Harold, I think, felt like it was a loss or a failure. And Harold wasn't used to failures.
Yeah.
So in as much as he would tell me, JR, I'm really proud of what you're doing, I would say, show me that pride, Harold. Write a check for me. And he said, I can't. I just can't. Yeah. Now, I think a part of that, of course, is the McCallum. The McCallum was his baby. And I think, and I love the McCallum as much as I love the Plaza Theater. And I think they're
And they are
hugely
a presenting sponsor here on Big Conversations.
Well,
JR loves the McCallum.
Yeah. No, I do love the McCallum. In fact, I want
to... could love the Plaza just as much.
We could love it even more, quite frankly.
I'll keep that in mind. But no, my next goal is I want to partner with the McCallum. I think there's great things that we can do together. And I want to bring the Annenberg into that, too. We are already... partnered with the Annenberg on a few things. But I think, you know, these three well-known, respected theaters need to partner.
Sense.
Think of what we can do if we came together on things.
How important to the Plaza was the Oakview Group stepping in to do programming, essentially?
It was the second smartest decision the board made, was to bring that in. And if you have another minute, there's a great story.
Wait a minute.
So here we have the Acrisure Arena comes to town, right? And they bring in one of their big guns, John Bolton, the senior vice president of Oakview Group.
Previous guest on the podcast.
Oh, okay. So you guys know how wonderful John is.
He's great.
He's an amazing guy. So here, John, you know, who's been moved around from place to place to open arenas and knows his stuff.
Because he's the arena whisperer. He knows how to open something and make it work.
Randy, 18 months, including the dead of summer, that guy goes from sand to a profitable hockey arena in 18 months.
In the desert.
In the dead of summer. Yeah. You know, most of that was built during the summer. It was horrible. Two summers. So anyway, here's John in town, and John's a nice guy, and I had an in with Oakview Group early on because one of my board members is a guy named Brian Ray. And Brian Ray, if you're not familiar with Brian, he is the lead guitarist and musical director for Paul
McCartney.
And
Wings.
And more exciting to me, Etta James prior to the band.
Yes.
And if you've ever met Brian, he is just the sweetest, coolest guy you've ever met. And he's this hardcore rocker, and he's a great guy and has a career on his own.
Would he like to do the podcast?
Oh, Brian would do it. If I asked him, I'd want to do it with him, though. I got to tell you, because I love Brian
so much. We're good with that.
100%.
Yeah, Brian is awesome. You guys will fall madly in love with Brian. Anyway, meanwhile, back with John Bolton. So John's now here in town, and Oakview Group, who's looking to get better known here in the Valley, because they have their eyes on the Palm Springs Convention Center and other things they want to do. They want to get heavily involved. They offered me $1 million of direct cash to the Plaza Theater, and then they offered me $500,000 in promotion in the arena. So there you are, waiting for hockey, holding your beer, your second or third beer, waiting for the game to start, and all the stuff's flashing on the Jumbotron, and in the middle of that, there's an ad for the Plaza Theater. It was just ridiculous that all of a sudden there would be this little promotion, as if anybody in that hockey arena cared, gave a shit about the Plaza Theater, right? So, but they were great. So anyway, John Bolton is now kind of involved, and he's kind of our liaison to Oakview Group. And so the bottom line there is that John got more and more involved. I put him on our board. John wanted to get involved in town too. And later on, we talked about, you know, the theater's well into restoration. And at that point, our only goal with my foundation was that we were going to restore it, raise the money, oversee the restoration, come up with a management paradigm for the city, and slide the whole thing back to the city. And about a year and a half ago, the city manager asked me to lunch and said, the city council wants the foundation to take the theater. Just take it over. We literally want to hand it to you to run and operate. We don't want to operate it.
So now the foundation has a mission and it has to continue.
Yeah, it was the worst idea I ever heard. I remember I got a little bit of a stomachache.
And Sausalito's looking pretty good.
Yeah. I'm literally got a little sick to my stomach, and I said, no, I don't think we'll be doing that. I mean, I literally thought, oh my God, this would chain me to this theater for the rest of my life. And I'm the guy who likes to build stuff and then move on. So I said, you know what? And I love our city manager, Scott Stiles. I said, Scott, I will take it to my board. But I can tell you right now, that's a long shot. That's a huge commitment. And I went to my board and I spent a half hour telling them every reason we shouldn't do this.
And they voted.
They voted unanimously to do it. And I remember thinking for the first
time. That's such a great story.
No, I remember thinking for the first time, what the fuck am I doing here? And I was terrified. I mean, I'm telling you, that's when I was really terrified, more terrified than the other story.
Because so, now it feels like a life sentence, right. Not a...
literally, I remember breaking out in a cold sweat when they... And I realized that we were... And I said, you're all married to this. You can't leave now. In fact, I have to go to them Tuesday, tomorrow, for a tough conversation about fundraising, and I'm going to remind them about their commitment.
Now, have you had a conversation with David? And I got to know David Reddy over the years.
Yeah.
Great guy.
He's a great guy, yeah.
Have you had... Because since he was the one who planted this bug and said, here's a great idea for your legacy, have you circled back to him and said, look what you did to me?
I told him he owes me his life. I said, you will be in service to me until I die, David Reddy.
What have you done to my legacy, David? No,
it's not a legacy now. It's a ball and chain.
I give him a lot of love and credit and hatred for what he did to me. I mean, with me to do that.
All right, one other very quickly. We're almost out of time, but I have a good friend, and he spends a lot of time with David, Aftab Dada, and he was pretty involved along with Harold in a lot of things in the city. Just tell me a little bit about your relationship with Aftab.
You know, Aftab's a great guy. The problem I had with that group, you know, that is a tight little, I won't say mafioso group, but that group.
But you did.
I used the word, didn't I? Never. You're never supposed to use that term with Harold's name either.
We have a thesaurus here.
God rest his soul. So, no, because Harold wouldn't support the Plaza, his world didn't want to. And I think they were all afraid to support the Plaza. Yeah. Subsequently, they did, by the way. Harold never would. He would never write a check. He would always say, JR, I love you. I love what you've done. I can't give you a nickel for it. And it was his way of saying, I think he would have felt disloyal to the McCallum. I think was, and his biggest fear, and I didn't get to say this earlier, was that I think he thought we were going to suck dollars that the McCallum would have gotten in our fundraising. And I don't think we ever really did, or those who did support us, who also support the McCallum, could afford to do both.
Yeah.
But I think Harold felt like he would lose control of the donor dollars that might go to the McCallum into the Plaza. I think ultimately that was...
And you couldn't lose control.
Exactly, Randy.
Yeah. You couldn't lose They're very control. Different theaters, though. Well, especially as Oak View Group is programming it. Very different.
Yeah. Well, and you asked about programming, and I said the second smartest thing we ever did. So later, you know, as John became involved with the city, we were then starting to look for management because now we were going to hire it and oversee it. And Oak View Group offered to manage and reduce their management fee by a lot. They've always been very committed to the Plaza. And at that point, John was sitting on my board just as a happy, great supporting guy. And we finally had to hire a general manager for the theater. This all happened kind of quickly. And we got 150 applications in about a week and a half from all over the country. And John calls me one day and he said, JR, I think I love it here. I think I want to stay. Would you guys consider me to run the Plaza?
That had to be quite a call.
It was literally like winning a lottery, yeah. Right? It's like asking Ford Motor Company to come do your oil change. I mean, to get John Bolton to be a general, you know, a manager for a theater. And I said, John, of course I'm going to want you to do this. I said, but you couldn't have told me 2 weeks ago before I started receiving offers of sexual favors, candy, and flowers all the people all over the country who want to come manage the theater.
You did get my application.
I just didn't think you were going to come through. That was my concern. Sausage company and all. Patrick, I just didn't think it was going to happen.
Yeah,
anyway, that takes us full circle on that. But yeah.
Well, there.
I can't. I'm embarrassed to say I may be the only person in the valley who has not been in the Plaza Theater yet. I did buy tickets. unfortunately, we couldn't make it that night. We were coming to the Icon. I can't wait to go in there. We've got tickets for a couple of other shows coming up. And
Randy, come on down. I might know someone who can take you through the theater.
No, that would be very cool.
And I'll give you the cook's tour. And, you know, you guys should come, and I'll show you our gorgeous new green room we built. And let me take you into the basements and up into the top and really show you what the theater looks like.
Done deal.
Yeah.
Look forward to that.
We'll do a remote.
Yeah.
We'll do a remote.
A remote from the...
Remember, we're sponsored by the McCallum.
Oh, that's
presently.
Right. Yeah.
There's room for other sponsorships.
There is room.
Plenty of room for other sponsorships.
Yeah, that was another one of those momentary, awkward, quiet moments on your show. I like that.
The great thing is, when I leave, nobody knows who I am. He has to deal with all the shit on that.
I think Patrick's pretty good with a tennis racket. He bats away all that. He takes chances. Many don't.
Well,
this has been an unbelievable hour.
I know. It's been incredible.
Yeah.
This has been terrific.
You guys are awesome. I've loved this. I think this is my favorite interview I've done on this.
This is really fun.
We're super appreciative that you took the time, JR. It's really great to have you.
Yeah.
Anything we all know what's happening at the Plaza, but anything you want to tell us about that we really need to be paying attention to?
You know, the programming is just going to get better and better. And again, you asked originally, Patrick, you know, or Randy, you did, about, you know, the programming. And the Oakview Group, the resources that they have because of who they are, you will see amazing programming coming to the Plaza Theater. And we release new information about programming literally almost every week. We have, I think, since we started, 140 shows booked.
Yeah, no, it's incredible.
And we have artists booking. Before we even opened, people like Lily Tomlin were already booking again for next year, before they were ever even in the theater, because their tickets were selling so fast. Yeah. So
I think
right now we're riding a magic carpet.
I want to ask one final question.
Oh, my goodness.
And that
Ladies and gentlemen, John McMullen.
There was a very unfortunate but timely thing that happened the first week, basically, that the theater was open, and that is Rob Reiner was scheduled to be there after his passing.
Yeah,
It was a horrible night, and in fact, the night that happened was the night before he was coming to Palm Springs to rehearse and do his show the next day. And I'm going to get a little teary here. A friend of mine was all excited about the show and their questions about tickets, because this was an event that was actually going to benefit the library in Palm Springs. It was one of our benefit performances, and they were advertising one thing. And anyway, I will tell you that imagine the fall from the excitement and the joy that we were all feeling.
Yeah.
That long, hard fall on that was a disaster on so many levels, and the loss of such a great man.
Yeah.
I was talking to Bruce Fessier the next night, and he
was scheduled to do the Q&A.
He was doing the Q&A.
He was going to do the Q&A. That was going to be a great night. There were all sorts of surprises planned. People were so excited about Rob coming to the theater.
Yeah.
John, you had to take
thank you, John.
Yeah, wow.
John.
That's great. We really wanted to end the podcast on that note.
I'm sorry.
Oh, but it's important to acknowledge
it. Really
that.
Was.
Should we go to Venezuela from here?
I think it's coming to us, so we don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah, Randy was complaining. He was having not a great day, and I said, well, you're having a better day than Nicolas Maduro, so it's all right. You're okay.
That's true.
All right, we are done. J.R. Roberts, thank you so much. And I think, you know, really enlightening. I hope that people understand what it took, the Herculean effort to do this.
But this is a big story in this desert.
I'm really delighted that we got a chance to do this.
Yeah. Me too, Patrick. This was a blast, and happy to come back. And if you want me to bring a few others, maybe have Brian come back and a few others.
That would be
absolutely
hear terrific. From their perspective what Brian brought to the theater.
Just
was huge.
Tell them how much fun you had until the last question.
Don't tell them how much we paid you.
No, because that. And Randy Florence, great job.
Thank you. It was great to see you again.
The research department and co-host.
Yeah, I didn't need much of it. This one just flew.
There'll be a little something extra in your paycheck next
Ooh,
week.
Thank you. Paycheck?
No, they won't. Oh. No, I'm just kidding.
Best glass of water I ever had.
Awesome.
I'm Patrick Evans. That's Randy Florence. Our guest, Aaron Roberts. Our producer, John McMullen. Our thanks to Skip Page and his entire team at Little Bar. Our thanks to the McCallum Theater, our presenting sponsor. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode of Big Conversations, Little Bar.
Big Conversations, Little Bar is a production of the Mutual Broadcasting System. This podcast is available in audio and video format. Visit our website at www.bigconversationslittlebar.com. New episodes are released every Monday.
Athletes and dreamers, stars of the screen, leaders and builders, and all. Little Bar at Big Conversations, Little Bar.